Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Happy, the ball itself has its own energy, or life force, if you will. Its natural environment is in the home. So why don't you send them home?
It's Mike Shope.
Why didn't you just go home? That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
And the Bulldog.
That Happy Gilmore, he's a real crack up, isn't he? I mean, he's a hoot. You know, what was great today, one of his fans mooned me and had Happy written on his ass. Ha on the one cheek, and then, sure enough, PPY right there in the other.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Happy learned how to putt. Uh-oh.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Why not a little golf? Fairly big tournament, stretch of tournaments, events on the PGA Tour going on now. That's a question I really do need to get an answer to. And Brian Kosigal, who joins me now on the Wester Hotline, is the perfect person to ask. Brian, so how was the tour done getting this? I mean, it's been many years now, this playoff format. Does it work? They moved the PGA out of August, and that helped. If this wasn't the reason, I don't know, maybe it was, like sort of open the doors to these late season events, and then, you know, they cut the field down gradually to get to the, you know, the tour championship or whatever it's called in the end. Has it been, would golfers, players, media, fans, would most people consider it successful, this?
I think so, in the sense that there is some sort of season ending event. I know that obviously golf still is going to be the four majors. Like, that's going to be number one for sure. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, I think in whatever order you want to put them in. And then probably, you know, on years that maybe there isn't the Ryder Cup. And I think the Ryder Cup, even though I think it's a tremendous event, it's during NFL. And we know, at least in Western New York, like, it can get lost during a Bills weekend. So, sure. Even that, necessarily, if you're a big golf fan, like, that can get lost at times. So I think this playoff is something that they were looking for a void to have some sort of season-ending event. I think, as you mentioned, the shift in the calendar, we're going to move the Players' Championship to March and then put the PGA Championship in May. And then there's one big event every month. And then August is the three-week playoff. They've tinkered with it over the years. They have had it go up to have as many as 120 in the playoff. Now this year it's 70. Last week was the first event, the St. Jude Championship in Memphis. That was the top 70. They cut it to 50 for this week, the BMW Championship in St. Louis, and then it'll go to 30 for the Tour Championship, as you mentioned. So, they've also tinkered with the points and all that sort of stuff. They've also had it where, you know, like, all right, well, if you come in first in points, you start at this score. You come in second in points, you start at this score, the staggered scoring. So they've gone back and forth with it. I don't think it's still exactly where they want it to be. And with the 2028 possible change in the calendar, with what's going to happen with the schedule and this new championship series and challenger series, essentially turning golf into maybe having some sort of demotion delegation or regulation, excuse me, where you can, if you don't make the top, so, you know, however many players they decide to do it, then you're in the secondary series trying to get up to the first series. So kind of similar to maybe what we see with soccer. That's coming, which means that they might be changing the playoff format again to include match play. So while I think it's gotten a little bit better, I don't know if it's still exactly what they want it to be. And players, I think, every year get asked about the format, and it seems to be mixed. Matt Fitzpatrick, who's from England, is like, well, you're asking a person from England. He's like, the regular season champ should be the champ. Why do we need a playoff? He's like,
right, like soccer.
That kind of thing.
Right.
Right. So, you know, it's three events, and they're huge money, and they're TV draws. I mean, I'm watching this week. I'm sure others are too. Even regular ESPN picked it up over, you know, these first 2 days. So there's money to be made, and we all understand why there's playoffs, but it's still not perfect. I would say that. So I want to say it's better, but I don't think it's exactly maybe what they want it to be. Having it end before the NFL starts, to me, though, is smart on the calendar.
That's what they have to do. That's what they think they have to do. I mean, yes. You said the money. I'm looking at the year-long schedule, and the majors come in around $20 million in purse. The Tour Championship next week is 40, which is way more than any other event, way more than the Masters or the U.S. Open. So, I mean, they'd have to put the money there to make it worth the players' while. I wasn't – like, I'm not so in tune with pro golf anymore after the last major that I really sort of sit down knowing what to expect. And then last week I turned it on and it was like every big name. Like, okay, well, that probably means we're in the playoffs here. Because, I mean, every big name was on the golf course, as is the case this week, as long as, you know, they were to have qualified. Is there anything on your mind in terms of sort of the year in the sport to this point, or whether that would be something that comes down to what happens in the next couple of weeks? I mean, the majors so tend to dictate that. And, you know, as we found out doing our pick 10 for the four major championships, this was like not an underdog year per se, but not an easy year to predict winners, as has been more the case in recent years. But apart from McIlroy at Augusta, and that was its own thing with his, you know, winning back-to-back there after so many years of falling short at Augusta, Aaron Rye, Wyndham Clark, Ryan Fox are your three other major champions this year, and, you know, not household names.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I think in some sense, you know, it's highlighted by its first major, the Masters. I mean, for some people, that is the only maybe golf event that they will lock in on the entire season. You know, I think all the majors have their allure to watching, but you mentioned it. Yeah, I mean, the other three names, I guess Clark now, who's won it twice, you can give him a little bit more love. But Rye and Fox, not that we should be surprised that they won. We always seem, you know, there's going to be first-time major winners that happen every year. It's more often than not that a repeat, just because it's, you know, there's 150 guys that show up at these events mostly. So yeah, there is a chance that you're going to get a first-time winner. Yeah, I feel like, you know, as the year goes on, the Masters and the U.S. Open to me are the big ones in terms of like maybe the attention or the prestige that I've gotten. I love the Open and I love the PGA too, but I feel like they're a little bit more secondary in terms of the attention that it gets. This playoff at the end, it's great because it is all the big names participating. But do we still say the playoff winner has accomplished more other than financial reasons? Yes. Than winning a major. Like,
no.
Would you rather win the Masters or would you rather win the FedEx Cup Championship? Well, probably I think if you asked 100 golfers, you might get all 100 to say the Masters.
Yeah.
I don't know, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. 100 for 100? I don't know if that ultimately in the end is what you would want the playoffs to be, but I think, you know, we can't make a fifth major here or we're not just going to manufacture one. What can we do? I think it's good. I mean, I think you're in August in Western New York, at the very least, we're still in the heart of the golf season. So for people that want to take in golf, I think this is a pretty good thing here. But for the year itself, I think, you know, we still know Scheffler, when he plays great, is still going to be the best and still might end up winning this whole playoff event and still have a chance to be whatever the player of the year honored is worth to you.
I haven't had it on today. I did have it on yesterday, but today I went for the debut of the Premier League season. And so still time for me, maybe for me to flip over here. Plenty of day left. And it seems like a great time for me to start playing golf tomorrow. My first time playing this year is tomorrow. Literally, I've not hit a ball all year. So what do you think about that, Brian? What should I expect? Like, I'm going to go low. That golf course is going to be defenseless.
Yes. Are you playing your own ball or is this a scramble?
Scramble.
Event?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's helpful for you then.
Yeah.
Because if you have a bad one, well then it's not going to count anyway. You know, towards your team, obviously. So
that helps.
It's the lowest pressure situation you're going into. So expectations of, oh my God, I just took an eight on a hole or something like that. Like that's not going to happen. So you don't have to get down on yourself or anything like that.
I'd love an eight.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean. I don't know, Mike, I played with you a few times when you were playing. I think your expectations, you were a pretty good golfer. So, I mean, your expectations probably of what you do tomorrow, you're probably going to be mad with regardless because you haven't played all year. Because I think your standards are probably high for yourself.
Not anymore. I got to a point, okay. And I don't take this personally. I feel like you're probably have a pretty really good disposition on the golf course, but I just came to think how stupid it feels to be mad at myself playing golf. Like I definitely was that guy, and it turned me away from the sport. Not that it was the sport's fault, but it just feels like such a waste of negative energy to be. I think this is my dad in me, because he had a golf phase when I was an adult. He had a golf phase, and we would play. And Brian, literally, and maybe this is a little bit of a defense mechanism, right? Because you're He's not trying to shoot a score. Literally, the only thing that mattered to him on the golf course was how far he could hit it. That's it. He just wanted to hit it as far. That's what felt good to him. Just, you know, I want to hit this ball as far as I can. That's what I'm here for. And, I mean, that's when I was playing to a handicap, and I'm like, you know, Dad, I would just roll my eyes sometimes because, you know, we couldn't play matches or anything really. He just didn't care about his score. But, you know, as I get older, I sort of like that. That energy and you spend, I mean, if you're serious about it, and that's great. And I also enjoyed striving for breaking 80, which I did a half dozen times or so. You know, like I cared about that. But now if I'm going to play this often, which is hardly ever, I promise myself and you right now, there's just no way I'm going to be upset with anything.
Yeah, that's good. You mentioned your dad, and I'll flip it, but in some similarity, the fact that now I am a dad with a kid who loves to play golf has made me drop my ego, drop my frustration, because I'm like, well, I'm telling him all these things in terms of how he should behave on the golf course and why I love golf, because of the sportsmanship and the, you know, keeping your own score and playing your own rules and don't get frustrated. You can't do anything about the last, like all these things that I'm telling him as a father, trying to be, you know, giving him good advice. And I'm like, well, obviously now I have to model that
as well.
Right. Like, I think that is honestly like really, really helped me maybe get past that frustration stage of you hit a bad shot, you have a bad hole. Like, how do you handle it? How do you react to it? And I definitely, for someone that plays a lot of golf, went through phases of like, you get so mad at yourself. And like, I didn't like it. You'd have these thoughts like mid round of like, why, you know, I shouldn't be playing this anymore. Like, why am I out here? Like, all I'm doing is getting frustrated and getting mad. And then, but I think dropping that sense of probably too, I have to just, you know, there's definitely some ego involved. Like, look, in the end, really nobody cares about your score other than you. Right. So just however you want to react to it is how you can maybe make it happen here in the end. So I think, you know, going out now and playing with my son, I feel like that has helped me because I'm almost more interested in his game than I am mine. So that changed my demeanor and I feel like helped me now be in a much better place if I'm having some sort of, you know, what I would consider to be a frustrating hole or a bad round or something like that.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this. It's such a great game for sort of self-evaluation and temperament and these kinds of things. You know, and there is a range here we're talking about, from taking it very seriously to taking it not seriously at all. And there's no real bad answer in there. You know, it's just, it's about you. But one of my favorite experiences on the golf course was a 3-day tournament with my friend Dylan in Orchard Park that we played in a few years. And the first time we played in it, we did really well, but I started to crack by the last day. We're trying to qualify for the playoff and I felt pressure and it was hot and I'm not in great shape. And it was my third day in a row playing. I was not used to that. And it got away from me toward the end. So that had all happened, Brian. And we still made it. And I had like 20 minutes to just change my shirt and splash some water on my face and try to, you know, get over myself. And so I did that. And it was 8 teams of 2 that went out to the same hole. And it cut down to 4 or 2, whatever it was. Like, you had 16 guys teeing off on a hole together. And we drew first. And so, I think it was alternate shot, too. Maybe. Anyway, I got on the tee, and I just had this thought. Wait till these people see how great I am. And, you know, I played all right from that point forward. You know, I was kidding. I'm not that good. But I just sort of, it just relaxed me. Just like, you know, try to relax here. Whatever it takes. And there's another thing I'm thinking about that I've referenced many times in a Sports Illustrated article from a long time ago, a comment made by somebody who is the current president, actually. It was an article about Trump's golf designs and different things. And he had a line, Brian, where he said, you know, something about like this topic. And he said, listen, no matter what happens on this shot, 6 billion people don't care. And, you know, that... you can do with that what you may, but I feel like that's another way of just sort of not stressing over a golf game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is such a hard game. I, you know, There's no other sport I feel like that a quarter of an inch. I mean, maybe hitting a baseball could equate a little bit with it, but you know, one eighth of an inch on your club can mean so much difference. Where you know, I think that everybody has to be less hard on themselves. If you are just an amateur golfer and you just play regularly here, like, and you're listening right now, like, I think, you know, here's our little soapbox today of don't beat yourself up,
because
it's so hard as it is. You know, the things that we so cliche to say, but it's so true, like the company, whoever you're playing with, family, friends, the outdoors, the scenery, like all that sort of stuff. You know, even whether you're playing a little match or a game or whatever, like all those sort of things, like soak all that in. Like that's the fun stuff of playing. And I try to remind myself that now here all the time.
The weather, the company, the geese in some cases. Yes. Here's to that. Let's just get, you have a show tomorrow before we change the subject from golf?
Yes. And I have a golf football trivia question if you want to play along here for a minute too. But yes, tomorrow, tee to green, we're at Pendleton Creek, ironically enough, where you used to play. We'll be there from 7 to 8. Kevin Sylvester, who's doing the PGA Tour live stream on ESPN Plus, part of our team, he's going to be on with us at 7:30 to talk more about the playoffs and kind of break down what's happening here. As this week, again, it'll go from 50 to 30 for the final week. But we'll be at Pendleton Creek 7 to 8 tomorrow morning.
Very good. Look for my name on the wall. Not in the bathroom. On the plaques there.
You know. I told you I have good fun with it. It's the Notre Dame play like a champion today. I tap it as I walk by it.
And you actually haven't quit the game. All right, let's hear this question.
Okay, so this is short, but I saw this stat on ESPN. I thought it was a great one. So Scottie Scheffler won last week. That was his 22nd win since 2022. So he's won 22 times. There's two NFL teams that have less wins in that span.
In the last 4 years.
So Scheffler's won 22 times in the last 4 years. There's two NFL teams that actually have less wins than Scheffler. Who are the two NFL teams? I'll give you one clue. One AFC, one NFC.
All right, I'll go Jets and...
That was my first guess.
Raiders? Raiders?
No. I'm sorry. Raiders have 21.
The Raiders are
there
right.
There you go.
And then NFC, let's say, I don't want to say Arizona.
You're right. 19.
I'll say Arizona.
Yep.
They had a playoff year, but that's more than 4 years ago now with Kyler.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I guess Scheffler's pretty good.
Yeah, he's good. And they had two college teams in this as well. Zach, you would probably love to have fun with this, but I'll just say them if you're interested. It's Boston College and Northwestern are the two college teams that have less than 22 wins.
In 4 years?
In the last 4 years.
There got to be more than two. I mean, there are some pretty bad college football programs. There's so many teams. But okay.
Gotcha. Maybe they were power conferences. Maybe. I'll have to look at that.
Okay. Yeah. How ready are you for hockey?
I mean, this weather would say I'm not, but the anticipation for the Sabres season is so different than what we've had in so long. Even last year, obviously with that season being so unexpected and so enjoyable in so many ways, like there was very, very little coming in, and it started so terribly. Like it felt like just rinse, repeat again with how it was going. I mean, we obviously got all the way to that December 9th date that we all referred to on the calendar where we thought, well, it's over. They're sitting in last and it's early December. Like we've seen this song before. And when's the last time we came in thinking they were going to be good? I mean, it had to have been maybe during Eichel's time for a little bit there, maybe a season or two when we thought we had high expectations, but it's been quite a while. In terms of the roster, we know it's not much different other than maybe the subtraction of Alex Tuch and the fact that they stayed Pat in goal, which I'm kind of curious to see how that plays out. I mean, I guess you could say playing the odds that between Lyon and Lukanen, one of them still can play good. So I guess that's the odds they're going with. But to me, going into the year, the fact that it'll feel like, hey, we have games that not only matter, but people are excited to watch right away to start on October 1st. Like, that's definitely the difference from years past.
Right. I made that point this week, too, that last year got so good, but not only was it not that right now, like last August, anticipation for it, but not even well until the season was it the case that people started to get really into it. I think it was probably halfway through the year, and they had had that winning streak January and then forward from there to the point where, I mean, who would have thought you would have those outdoor canal side party scenes last year at this time? You know, just that seemed almost impossible to believe, but it happened. So soon enough. Brian, thank you. Off to the ballpark, did I hear?
Yep, going to the Bisons tonight. I just was thinking the calendar is running out, and I haven't been to as many as I would like to have, so this seems like an absolutely gorgeous day. So I'm like, that's the plan. We're going to, the family's going to the Bisons tonight.
Very good. Have fun. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mike.
Brian Koziol, tee to green tomorrow morning on WGR. Then we're doing the cool thing during the game with our guys on the stream talking about it as it plays out on the YouTube stream, not on the radio, but you can follow along with Bills Browns that way, which I think is an idea long overdue. And I know there are surely podcasts and different enterprises everywhere that do things like that, you know, watch the game with me. I wanted something like that 20 years ago here. Not that we had YouTube, but I just always wanted to be on the air during the game when we didn't have the games, but like you couldn't do it. It's not, they don't let you. there was no chance of that. But I always thought that would be a fun listen, you know, like you don't necessarily want the announcers. You want your friends. I think maybe I remember David Wells talking about this once, like just, I don't know what the context was, the former pitcher. That the same kind of thing. And now you have the Mannings who do it. And I have found that I got less into it after it arrived. I mean, just sort of gradually. I love the idea. I just didn't always want the conversation to be so far away from the game. And, you know, people complain about us in this way sometimes, you know, like when we're way off whatever like the big sports topic should be, you know, and that's probably fair enough, but that's a cool way to watch the game, I think. And, you know, people that you like and trust talking about it as it plays out. I think it's great that we're doing that tomorrow. So check that out if you want. 803-0550 is the number. Got a little bit more baseball I want to get to, some football, of course, as well. Bulldog back on Monday. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
He's a low runner. You know, his center of gravity is really low. During the game last week, felt like he was driving the pile by himself. Like, he's got a lot of power to him, and very excited to see what he can do these next couple weeks and next couple games. But, yeah, to see practice, defense wants to thud. Offense, you got to bring your shoulder pads, too, and typically low man's going to win in those scenarios. And, like I said, he's a pretty low runner.
Josh Allen on undrafted free agent rookie running back Ian Wheeler. Sal and I talked about him for a minute yesterday, right around this time. Sal said that Wheeler had a run where he just, Sal's word, trucked somebody. And I think I spent a few minutes, like 24 hours ago, sitting here talking about how there are sometimes players in the preseason that you didn't even know existed, and they make a mark. I think it's usually running backs or wide receivers through the years. Like, there's often one guy, Christian Wade, I referenced him yesterday, but had forgotten his name in the moment, the rugby player trying to make it in football. Wheeler is a curiosity for me. Ty Johnson has been hurt. James Cook probably doesn't play at all. Let's go see what Ian Wheeler looks like on the field. Sal said that he thinks he had passed Frank Gore Jr. How do you like Zay Jones getting his name back on the show there? Signing with Houston. He has stayed in the league, Zay Jones. Not big years or anything. One with Jacksonville was pretty good, 82 catches. That was in 22. But he has lasted. And I don't know, like these kind of signings, Sterling Shepard and Zay Jones, they've felt Houston that they needed bodies, and it remains to be seen whether these guys even make the roster for that opener against the Bills. But Shepard has I mean, I'm not serious about him or anything, but I always liked Sterling Shepard. It seemed like there was a good player in there, but he was hurt a lot and just, you know, had his career kind of curtailed by that. Jones was an enigma here. The Bills traded him during the 2019 season to the Raiders, and since then he's been with Jacksonville and even last year with Arizona. When I think about Zay Jones, I think about my friends who won the FFPC main event 2 years in a row, and that's an amazing feat. You have to be good enough to sort of qualify for the playoffs, and then you have to beat some number of other teams that also did that to win the $1 million, as it happens. And I learned a lesson from these guys, and it involved Zay Jones. Because I've gotten teams to that sprint too, that's great, but have never come close to winning it. And what they knew to do, I mean, it doesn't have to work, but, you know, think about it this way. In that kind of tournament, you're competing with teams that have the same top players as you do very often. Whoever, if Jonathan Taylor is the best running back of the year in fantasy football, then naturally his teams are more likely to make it to those last weeks than somebody who was injured, you know? So you're going to see a lot of Jonathan Taylor, if that's the guy for this example. And what they figured out to do was, I don't think it was Jonathan Taylor, it doesn't matter, bench two better, presumably better players for Jerick McKinnon and Zay Jones in that particular week, just to be different. Because if I'm going to put the same guys as you on the field and or I'm in the lineup and I'm behind you, then I'm not getting anywhere this way. I might move up the leaderboard a little bit, but I'm not like winning if I do that. So I wish I could remember who they benched. Maybe Nick is or Sean is listening and would be able to tell me. But they benched, you know, I'm sort of sometimes a slave to the app and just like, what is the more optimal play? And I just really didn't have the courage to go against that. But these guys did. And wouldn't you know, both, I think this is right, both McKinnon and Zay Jones that day had 3 touchdowns. And boom, they skyrocketed all the way to first place. I think that's the Hamlin year. I think that's the second year they won. I'm pretty sure of that. I want to call up that. It was Jacksonville and Dallas, if I remember right. And, yep, there it is. Week 15. That's right, because that tournament is weeks 15 through 17. And they started Zay Jones, who had sort of a okay season against Dallas. Jacksonville wins the game in overtime, 40-34. I mean, it sort of works because that probably was expected to be a shootout, like a lot of other Dallas games. And he caught 3 touchdowns to in that game. Not even, nothing in overtime. They won on a pick 6 in overtime as I'm looking at it. And McKinnon, I think McKinnon might have scored in overtime. How do you like that? That's running pretty pure. When you make 2 plays like that and both games go to overtime, Chiefs, there it is, Chiefs, Texans. I can't say I remember this better than they would, where it's 2 touchdowns. Nope, it's 3. No. Doesn't matter, but I just want to be right. I guess it's 2 and a 2-point conversion. What did McKinnon give them that day? Nick's driving around. He's talking about me? 10 for 52 and a touchdown, 8 for 70 and a touchdown receiving. Nice. So, might not apply to your leagues, but if you were to play in a tournament like this, and I play a lot and should have already known that, if, you know, you get close to having a real chance of winning. And they went all the way to the top, survived the last 2 weeks. They had the Hamlin incident, and that game gets canceled, and they won. So I remember they had that game against the Bills-Bengals game. They needed to fade Devin Singletary, you know, like not get a big game from Devin Singletary. And the game didn't get far enough along for it to ever really be, you know, close or known or anything like that. Zay Jones, you know, good luck to him. Maybe the Bills end up facing him in the opener, or Sterling Shepard. Houston is down. Jaden Higgins out for the year. And still Tank Dell, it seems. So it's Nico Collins and, I don't know, Xavier Hutchinson, There'll be other guys. Like, it makes sense that they went outside. I think, you know, some people were speculating a trade, but no trade. They did this instead. So far, at least. We got a company email this morning with the sad news that our former colleague and really a legend in the game, Sandy Beach, had died last week. He was 86. I don't have many, unfortunately for me, too many like personal stories with him, but I'll say a couple things. First, like I think anybody would say that knew him or knew of him. I mean, they don't get much bigger in radio than Sandy Beach. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, for starters. Like, as a DJ in the, you know, decades ago. I remember when I was in high school, so late 80s, I was in an internship program, and I was working at Channel 2 once or twice a week as a high school intern. And Sandy was a speaker at an event where all the interns were there, and, you know, he was really fun and funny, and, you know, he's such a big guy, too, if you didn't know. Sandy Beach was really tall and big, and so a real presence. And he had a gift for, you know, for conversation, and always seemed to do it with a smile on his face. He was like that. At least that was my, and I think a lot of people who knew him would say the same thing. Those were mostly my interactions with him. It was never anything else. You know, we didn't really see each other that often. He was on a different time slot, and, you know, not always, but didn't really spend a lot of time with him. I remember that our old boss, who has recently left our company, who was very close to Sandy, and he and I had many great conversations. Just loved to talk about radio, and even though I worked for him until just like a month ago, we always had like very nice, easy conversations. Tim Wenger. And Tim wrote in this email today to tell us all that Sandy had died, about how he, when he started here, he went to get him from Milwaukee and brought him to Buffalo. And like, I think they were close friends, but he would tell me, and we're all different in this way. Bosses are different and hosts are different. He would tell me that Sandy always liked to sit with him before his show and just sort of like talk about what he wanted to talk about. And I am really not like that. I've had to do it at times, and I certainly would do it if asked, but I'm more sort of spontaneous. I mean, I have my own process and my own notes, but I don't really have that, like, I guess that I have to say interest in that, but I'm an employee. But Tim would say that Sandy loved to do that. He wanted sort of almost like it was warming up, that he would, you know, sit in Tim's office and talk about his ideas and different things. And so different approach, but just a great broadcaster, a legend, and very sad to hear about his death today. I guess it was last week, but we found out today. So yeah, sad news in this building. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. He'll be back with me on Monday. Take a break here. This is WGR.